Ahoy!
Ahoy there! Ahoy!
I didn't dare imagine you'd be there. Oh, Craig.
Oh, Martin.
Oh, Craig, what a joy. What a joy to hear you. It's been a very long time.
It's been extraordinarily long. Can I just ask, before we go any further, how are the gates? Are you satisfied? Are they operating in a manner which is satisfactory?
Where do I even go? Where do I even begin? The gates on the South Drive. South Lodge gates. Yes. Well, I think it all came about because one of the boars rampant. You know the Bain family. Crest is a boar rampant.
I do.
Yes. Yes. Well, we have these two boars standing rampant, as I say. And actually, rampant is the key word because it has been brought to our attention by some of the guests we've had to our the garden, because the gardens at Dunwall are open to the public until the middle of November every year. Oh, come in and see our snowdrops if you're in the area. Anyway,
Have you got a lot of snowdrops? You've got an impressive array of snowdrops. Yes,
we have. Yes. That's right. Yes, the Royal Horticultural Society have given us a silver medal for our snowdrops. Not the gold, which rankles, I'll be honest, but there we go. One of the guests did point out that the boars rampant on the gate both have quite substantial erections. No nice way of putting that. Yeah. And inside the stone, I think there must be some sort of, I don't know, some iron or something. I don't know, there's some kind of metalwork inside. And there's a sort of verdigris that's coming through there. So it means the ends of the boar's penises are really quite pronouncedly green. Anyway, it all came about when we were trying to address this, seeing if there's any way we could maybe minimise the priapic element of the boar's rampant. One of them then fell off. Anyway, one thing led to another. As I think I told you, we were in the process of renovating the entire gates because it was all just a disaster.
It sounded like a logistic. Is it logistical or logistical nightmare?
Logistical nightmare. Yeah, yeah. Well, it did because
it would be logistic if some philosophers had had a problem.
Yes, exactly.
With the actual existence of the gates, perhaps.
Yes. Yes.
But, yeah.
And you'd probably pronounce it logistic, because that's people who like to speak Greek. They hate a soft G, don't they? Anyway, on we go.
Understandably.
We discovered a caldarium, as you know, there, a sort of a Roman sauna.
Brothel was the interpretation I was given by...
It's a sauna. I think it's ours not to guess and then cast aspersions on what took place in the caldarium, the sauna.
But weren't there sort of deer skin prophylactics found on the floor?
This is all subject to
conjecture.
Subject to conjecture, of course. And scattered coins, various sort of sterii of one kind, usually quite sort of low denomination. So if it was a brothel, I'm guessing it was either people were coming with their pockets full, or it was from the less expensive end of the brothel spectrum.
I see. Okay, that's interesting.
So there we go. Interesting. Anyway, we have now rehung the gates, rehung the boar rampant. Turns out we couldn't decrease the priapism.
Oh, no. So the whole thing was, as it were, in vain.
Sorry, well, not
it's
really.
A terrible
because
pun.
The boar, the wild boars.
I've made myself laugh there.
Yes.
It's very much in vain. I've said it again, as if that would make it funny.
Twice as funny. The boars are now back on the pilasters, which is good. And
it's very pleasing.
We have discovered that for now, I think we're going to see how it goes, and we may just have to put a plaque up in acknowledgement.
Yes.
Of the because there's nothing really we can do. And also they're listed, you see, Greg. They're listed.
Right.
There's not really that much we can do. English Heritage and all the rest of them. Listed buildings. Oh, my great goodness. Where does that... Anyway, they were happy to draw a veil over the caldarium because we bulldozed that, as you say.
We've put
a lovely little a pizza oven there, so we can run a little pizza van during the summer.
Well, that's a nice way to remember it, isn't it? The handiwork of those ancient yes, Roman the, punters.
Exactly. The courtesans. Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yes.
Nice to be able to do something.
So sort of, dare I call it, a happy ending to the story.
You're certainly full of them today, aren't you, Claire? Yes. Yes, my goodness. How are you? Where are you? Where are you?
I tell you what, I feel 3,000%. I really do. I feel perhaps 3,003%. I've taken up wild swimming. Have you heard of this?
Oh, Lord, yes. I mean, there's around here in Ludlow, there's scarcely a puddle that you can walk past without seeing a couple of bobbing heads, usually with long shoulder-length hair.
Woolly hats often.
Huge beards. Always woolly hats. Where do I even begin with a wild swim?
Well, you see, I've fallen rather under the spell of this character called Wim Hof. Have you heard of him?
Wim Hof. I mean, no is the short answer to that. No, I'm.
Well, he is Dutch. I mean, I think he is Dutch. He is. Well, he's called the Iceman. That's his nickname. He loves to get naked in icy pools. And he's a. Well, I'll tell you how I came across him. I was just on Netflix, just sort of idly browsing, and I don't know how the algorithm does this, but it came up as a suggestion that I should watch Goop, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow's series.
I think we all should. Just as a cautionary tale. Sorry.
Just for that sort of basic level of medical information we all need, which she unquestionably relies on with her products. Anyway, this episode, particular episode, came up, caught my interest, and Wim Hof took some of the workers. I can't exactly. Is it working if you're part of Goop? I don't know if that's working.
I don't. What? Exactly. Making whiffy flange candles? I don't think
so.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's.
I think that is officially one of the flavours, I think.
It is a whiffy flange candle. Yes.
I think so.
Well, perhaps it was the said inventress who was on this particular programme. I don't know. Yeah. It was just a group of, I have to say, radioactively trendy people from Goop being given a sort of seminar by Wim Hof. So he was teaching them about how you cope with getting in really icy cold water and all the benefits of it, all the incredible benefits, you know, the endorphins that you get after you've... I've taken it up, Martin.
Do you know what? I scoff, but I can see the benefits immediately. Terribly good. How frequently do you hurl yourself into the wild?
Well, I was going very frequently, actually, until about a couple of weeks ago when I got a really bad ear infection. It's actually quite hard to find. Here's the thing: wild swimming is a stupid idea because actually, unfortunately. Swimming in the places I've been. I found a sort of lovely sort of natural lake I thought would be sort of perfect for it. And of course, I went for a swim. It turns out it's sort of absolutely festooned with bacteria. So I got a little ear infection.
When you say natural lake, I mean, does it come from... I mean, you always have to worry about sewage, really. And also field drains as well.
You're so right. And perhaps lacking your custodial knowledge, I basically took a dip in what was essentially a slurry pit.
And that sounds about... Yes, we've got a few of those.
I got a really quite florid middle ear infection, burst my eardrum, and I've been feeling fantastic. Don't get me wrong, I feel absolutely fantastic, but I've not been able to hear anything for the last...
Oh, God heavens.
2 weeks, and I'm kind of back on beam now. The right ear, in the left ear, by the way, just the ear that burnt. I mean, I'm fine in the right ear. And I do feel very, very motivated and clear-headed. I just can't physically get out of bed or stand up. So it's a bit of a sort of two-edged sword, the whole wild swimming thing.
Given with one hand and really punches you in the nose with the other.
Incidentally, Wim Hof has got a very punched-looking nose.
Has it?
This is one of the things that slightly disturbs me about Wim Hof. Have you seen a picture of him? Is you would hope that the person who dipped himself in ice all the time would have the body of a whippet and the hair of, I don't know, perhaps a young Bruce Springsteen. But what you get is someone who looks like he's basically sleeping on the streets, and he's got there's a paunch there. There's a certain paunch. I don't know if you've noticed, but I haven't. There's yoga. People who do a lot of yoga get that same look. And it's a peculiar thing. That sort of, it seems like yoga and drinking 9 pints a night affect the body pretty much the same way physiologically.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Nice. So, as I say, he looks like a guy who probably drinks Terps from the bottle and you know.
Yes, takes the lid off the Terps and throws it away.
Takes the lid off the Terps, throws it away, and then can't quite make it to centre point.
No.
he looks slightly bedraggled. I have to save him off. But when he speaks, Martin, it's magical.
Oh, does it? Does it tingle?
It does.
Does it work its magic? By the way, where are you? Did you come last time I spoke to you? You were in Belgium, I think. You're busy.
No, very, very luckily. I was repatriated from Belgium. I'm back in Chingford. Yeah, back in Chingford.
It's a very
lucky thing too, because as I say, I have been sort of bedridden for the last few days, and you know, I count myself lucky to have caught whatever it is I've caught from an English lake, because I mean we certainly couldn't trust those European lakes.
No, you certainly could not. No.
So, Martin, what's caught your eye in the news?
Wow, what an interesting and wide open question that is. I was very interested to read, as I'm sure you would have been as well, about the Edvard Munch. They discovered you might call it a graffitum.
Yes.
Or graffito. I don't know what the singular, because several different. I'm going to go with graffitum because it sounds more fun. On one of the many copies of The Scream, I can't remember how many copies he did. They're all originals, but it was clearly a picture that went down a storm. So he thought, I'll just keep painting it. They seem to like it. I'll paint it. And they discovered that written in one of the little stratum of the light, he's written, clearly the work of a madman, I think is what he's written. Clearly, well, obviously he'd written it in, what was he, Norwegian? Munch?
Norwegian, yes, I believe.
Yes, I think so, yes. He must have written it in Norway. He'd have written it in his mother tongue, I can't see. You know, he wasn't that mad. So clearly the work of the man. Anyway, they've looked at this and they've puzzled and they've hummed and they've hard and they've hummed again. And then they've decided that actually maybe, this is quite fun, there was somebody called Guleng who was researching it. I was reading that Guleng was helped by a team, including the conservator Thierry Ford, research librarian Laffer Jacobsen, and editor Hilde Boo, who used infrared technology to analyse the handwriting and compare it with Munch's letters. Yeah. So presumably, I love that they used infrared technology. I mean, basically, what they did, they got it and said, it looks a bit like, what do you think, Hilda? She went and looked at, Thierry? Oi, Thierry! He goes, eh? Viens ici, Thierry. He goes, what do you think? Is it, you think this is? And he goes, but switch on the infrared. Switch off the infrared. Switch it on again. Yeah, could be. Looks a bit like he's writing there. Look, there. What do you think? Goes Hilda. I don't really know. Laffer? Anyway.
Yes, you're right. What qualification can there be for a handwriting expert?
I mean, we're expert. They're using infrared technology. It still comes down. So I'm saying, do you think that's the same writing? Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, look at the top. Look at the D there and the D there. That's a bit like it, isn't it? It goes on the top there. No.
Yeah, so in the view of these four international experts in handwriting.
Yes.
It is the work of Munch, correct?
Munch, which I think therefore throws some interesting thoughts on it, because he was clearly the work of a madman, I mean, is clearly the very, also the use of the word clearly is rather interesting as well. I mean, obviously they're translating from the Norwegian, but still the Norveg. But clearly the work of a madman is not the sort of, it sounds a very lucid thing to write, doesn't it? It's a sort of auto-commentary.
It does, doesn't it? Oddly, that makes him sound less mad and sort of and pursued by demons than if he just painted that incredibly disturbing painting and left it untouched.
As it was, yes. In a way, yes, it reminded me a little bit of that. Do you remember the song by the Avalanches? That boy needs therapy. Wah, wah, wah. Wow, uh-huh. That boy needs therapy. Do you remember that song?
I do remember that song.
That was a tremendous song. Frontier Psychiatrist, it was called, I think.
Nice.
That boy. Anyway, it just had that sort of, you know, he's passing little comment on himself. This boy needs therapy. In a way like, I'm a bit mad, me. So that was the kind of angle I took it to be said from.
Yes, it's funny though, isn't it? When we have a whole picture, and they say, you know, as I say, picture paints approximately 1,000 words. All the information that we have from the picture would tell you that he had experienced really extreme states of mind, and feeling. What I'm saying is, you could almost argue it the other way. He felt it necessary to also add some performed sense of insanity to it as well.
I think that's a very interesting point that you raised there. Sorry, Craig, on you go.
Well, I'm just, you know, there is an argument. You know, there is an argument for that being even more insane. That's what I'm saying.
Well, there is, but also, you know, maybe the sanity comes from the fact that he is aware, possibly, that it is a more interesting piece of art as a representation of a deranged or unhinged mind. You know, as it stands, I mean, obviously it is a hackneyed piece. Now we've seen its representation again and again and again, and obviously in the film Scream, I remember walking down the aisles of a supermarket on a day that I hadn't realised was Halloween, and one of the shop assistants, because obviously they thought it was hilarious for all the shop assistants to be dressed in quite gruesome masks. Turned around, and I was looking down at the floor, and I looked up and suddenly saw this sort of melted, disfigured Scream mask. Yeah. And ironically, I did, in fact. Scream is precisely what I did. I got the fright of my shitting life. I don't mind telling you. It was quite extraordinary. I'd only popped in to buy some dates.
Yeah.
Anyway, actually, dates, ironically. The date was the one thing I'd neglected to remember. Yes. But it has become a bit of an emblem, hasn't it? I remember I was of that age when I was still probably pre-teen when it was being brought out as a thing to provoke conversation in class, usually in sort of English classes, I suppose.
Right, yeah.
And there was the Scream, and it became a little bit, I mean, now it's sort of gone, it's gone even more extremely into that role. But it is, one has to try and sort of wash it and put it through the ringer and remember what the effect of it was when one first saw it. It was, I think there's something, I'm not looking at it now, but I'm vaguely remembering, there's something of a sort of, almost like a sort of barometric pressure amongst all the colours in the sky. Isn't that right? I'm still thinking, oh, almost like there's a
very
sort of
much
magnetic
yes.
isobars
painted
or something.
Quite a few different ways, is it? But there's a great swirl of colours, yes. Again, and you get reminded of Gauguin and Van Gogh. I'm always also reminded of the Bacon, the Screaming Popes as well. It feels like there's a direct line.
Yes. Absolutely,
well.
Isn't there? And there's a, yes, the scream is less vicious, oddly. It's more bewildered, I think, in Munch.
Yes.
Whereas the Bacon scream is a distorted and a sort of rasping, visceral scream, I think. This one, I mean, again, it looks different, possibly in different pictures. But
it's almost innocent, isn't it?
It is almost innocent. This well done.
Almost
that's exactly
innocent scream.
Right. Yes.
And then the bacon one. It's almost erasing those characters, isn't it? It's almost erasing their faces.
Yes.
It's so almost like the antimatter that is just completely dissolving and it's completely destroying those living. Well, those emblems of belief. We've got very deep, haven't we?
Well, we have. It's interesting. Oh gosh, we mustn't do this on our cultural podcast again.
No,
goodness me,
we mustn't get into interesting chats like this.
Well, I was interested, but what is interesting though?
Yeah.
I was. Let's see if I can remember what my train of thought was, because We were discussing, well, we suppose, being in the van of a new movement. I suppose to be in the van of a new movement, you would... What's so satisfying about it is it shows that you are already of, not just of influence, but of sufficient influence to change the direction of travel. And that, I think, is an extraordinary thing. This will seem like quite a jump, but it's sort of linked in my mind. Armie Hammer.
Yes, he's definitely in the vanguard of something, isn't he?
Has been in the news. Yes, he's certainly been in the news. Armie Hammer. Armie.
This is fascinating, isn't it? Armie Hammer. So I know what you're referring to. Is it the texts?
I believe he's sent texts saying things like, "I want to eat you serious."
Yeah.
And things like, I'm not sure I've ever admitted this before. It sounds a bit like... I don't know if you're an aficionado of... this is quite a while back, of Succession. But it sounds like sort of thing.
Yes.
Tom from Succession. I can hear the Matthew McFadden saying it. Fuck, I want to eat you. I can hear... Do you know what I mean? I can hear him going, but fuck, no. I'm hearing the voice of Matthew McFadden as I say that.
Armie Hammer, of course, the first time I was aware of him, anyway, was in The Social Network, where he played...
Yes, exactly, as the twins, the Winklevoss.
That's right. And then, of course, it was Call Me By Your Name with the
Here's the thing, yes. With Timothy Chalamet.
That's right.
Yeah. I thought that was a rather wonderful film. I loved that film.
Here's where I am with Armie Hammer. First of all, I'm always interested to hear about a new kink that has never... as a man of a certain age, I feel like I've seen and heard it all. And I'm kind of slightly excited to discover, there's something new that I've never heard of. I've heard of cannibalism, but I mean, I've never known that as being a kind of kink. And that's interesting. That's very, very interesting.
Well, as a father, I remember when we had tits. Letitia, our daughter, known familiarly as Tit. She doesn't actually call herself that anymore. She felt it wasn't appropriate on her theology course, but I digress. Tits, when she was little, I would often say, I could eat her. And Daisy said, you know what? That is a common form of male overwhelming love and passion. Apparently lions quite often eat their cubs.
Huh.
It's a sort of devoted love of such extremity that, you know, you don't know where to house it. And so you sort of end up going, gah, you kind of want to eat the thing that you love.
Yes.
And I can sort of understand it. I can understand that sort of overwhelming sense. You know, the only two things you really know to do with things that you love desperately are either to eat them or to have sex with them. You know, and I've tried shagging a Snickers, but it doesn't really end well. Actually, no, it ends perfectly well, but it doesn't go well before then. But
yes, so Armie Hammer, my sort of feeling about this is, I just feel like to be successful in life, you need to be really depraved.
Mm.
Armie Hammer, extremely successful. It seems like most people who are incredibly successful in life, you'll find out at some point or another that they're absolutely depraved in their private lives.
I think they are.
I think that's what's been holding me back. I need to get some kink, Martin. I need to get some kink into my life.
Oh, Craig, you're full of kink. You just don't realise it. You need to get out more and realise how different you are from the world. All kinds of things that you look on as perfectly acceptable behaviour. You'll suddenly realise, Craig... You're so kinked. You're like a I don't know what,
like an Amazon hosepipe.
There you go, exactly. But actually, you know, where I wonder, and this actually comes up because, of course, the film To Olivia has just dropped, which tells the story of Patricia Neal and her marriage to Roald Dahl, or perhaps vice versa. He being the celebrated children's author, of course. The film has come out, as now seems to be perfectly customary and normal, to a brouhaha from all kinds of people, because Roald Dahl was known to have been quite an anti-Semite, in his time. I'm not sure he was necessarily by the time he died, but certainly at various points in his life, he wrote pretty ghastly things about the Jews. I think he also belonged to a generation that had views on race and empire that wouldn't necessarily chime with today's crowd. And so, therefore, there's been a certain amount of noise from people on the fringes. And I do wonder that actually it'd be quite nice if we could maybe untether the works of great artists, great writers, great auteurs from every single one of their deeds or misdeeds throughout their natural
but
life.
I think we nice, do, but it? We do that, don't we, with time. You know, with time. I mean, who knows so. What Plutarch got up to in his...
Oh, I do. One knows only too well. I
mean, yes, well, yeah, good example.
Take a look at that. That'll give you some kinks.
Yes. Put it that way. Plutarch, not without his peccadillos. And we certainly celebrate his writing today. I think it needs a certain amount of distance, you know, that can be provided with time, history. Yeah, but...
yes, the sands of time.
But I think our relationship with the... with the works of complicated people has always itself been complicated. And here's the thing. They're all, you know, generally, I think the people who produce the works of art which stand out above the humdrum are not humdrum themselves. They either become or started out as something quite out of the ordinary. As I'm saying that, I'm thinking of one really obvious counterexample, which is Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, well, Kelsey Grammer.
Kelsey Grammer from Frasier, which is...
Absolutely, Frasier himself.
Coming back, which is wonderful. So is Sex and the City. Frasier, I think, happily coming back with the important members of the original cast, obviously, possibly not Dad. What did I get to was he has a tattoo, doesn't he? Do you know about Kelsey Grammer's tattoo? This is almost the opposite end of the scale from Armie Hammer, you see.
Okay. No. Do not. What's it? Is it a? Oh, this is a good thing. What you do is you have a best before date from a couple of years ago. But then no one's gonna. Just when Armie's getting his knife and fork out, he goes, "Oh, hang on. What's this say? Oh." That's before the 12th of April, 2018. Fuck off. Sorry, we don't normally swear on this. I just felt I don't know if that's how Armie Hammer talks. Swearing. What's Kelsey Grammer's tattoo?
He's got his wife's name tattooed on his groin. Yes, wow. I mean...
Peering out through bushes of pubic hair or on the actual...
I always picture it, and I say that as if I often picture Kelsey Grammer's groin tattoo, which is absolutely not true. But I always imagine it being at the top of his sort of inner thigh, somewhere towards the edge of his scrotum, but before the hair starts on his leg.
Okay,
you know, there's a little smooth bit.
Yes, that perhaps nice I'm bit at the away. Top. At the top of the page.
That nice bit at the top. That's just that nice bit at the top there. I think that would be quite painful to have tattooed.
Yeah.
But it's probably the best place to display
his wife's
a groin,
name. Was this an act of devotion, I suppose? So should she be in the vicinity? She can...
It's the opposite. It's saying, I'm probably going to get down to my undercrackers with somebody, but at that moment I want some kind of firebreak between me and infidelity. Isn't that what it's saying?
I see.
Whoever is going to see that groin tattoo.
Wow. So some Las Vegas escort.
they're not going to care, are they? It's probably a good... Actually, do you know what? It's the old hide at the house, they'll never look for us there.
I mean, if I were Mrs. Grammer, I would not be... I'd be... slightly troubled. I'd be troubled by that, I think. I'm not sure I'd find that a tremendous security blanket, I think. Think, oh, no, it's fine. My husband turned up to me. He said, oh, by the way, you'll never guess Angie Grammer.
Kate, I think.
Oh, is she Kate?
Kate, yeah.
Kate. Well, that's about easier. It's only fewer letters. Fewer letters for the tattooist, you know. Ow, ah, ah. Anyway, you'll never guess, Kate. She goes, why? Why is it? He goes, I've had your name tattooed into the soft skin at the top of my thigh. Okay. Okay. No, 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 no. It's just no, no, no. It's good. It's for a good reason. It's so that if I'm ever, you know, if I'm ever in fragrante delicto, or someone else is about delicto, then they can say, "Oh, who's this Kate Grammer?" And I'll say, "Oh, gosh, that's a very good question. She's my wife." Sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Angie. That's where Angie came from. I'm so sorry, Angie. You must get off your knees. Off your knees. Let me help you up. There we are. Oh, you didn't have any knickers, did you? You put the rest of your clothes on. Here's your fur coat. And I'd better send you on your way. I'll ring my wife now. Gosh, that was close. That's how I imagine it would work, something like that.
Well, Martin, I think that absolutely flew by.
Did it not? What a lovely plate of fat to chew. That's really revolting. What a nasty way of putting it, but you know what I mean.
Well, expressive nonetheless.
I've gone back to Kelsey Grammer. Don't chew that bit of fat. Anyway.
But it's not my fault if you do, because I've taken every possible precaution here by tattooing my wife's name near my private parts.
Yes.
Perhaps it's time to I thought rather as an act of novelty, I brought this Anglo-Saxon longboat. Don't mistake it for a Viking longboat. It's not a Viking longboat. It would be a Viking longboat if it had a mast and some sort of sail. But this obviously just has this rather roughshod wooden box turret thing in the middle. But otherwise, it does look rather like a Viking longboat. It's only suitable for fresh water. But shall we pole
off? Yes, off you go. Yes. Are you all right just rowing that on your own? It looks like you need
I am absolutely. Yes, you just rest there.
12 Vikings.
You just watch the
Anglo-Saxons.
Yes, there we go. Anglo-Saxons. Not Vikings. Definitely not Vikings. No. Very similar profile, but just completely different materials, keel, and as I say, central.
Yes.
central protection area. Central, here we go. Dehoy!
Dehoy there.
Dehoy!
Watch your central section. Watch it. Oh, that's okay. It's okay.
Oh, dear.
As you were.
It's low bridge. Too late.
Yes, watch. Oh, right. I'll just get into my little coracle.
You've been listening to Time Ghost. Time Ghost was created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite, and the exec producer was Claire Broughton. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast. You can now follow Time Ghost on Instagram. Just search @TimeGhostPod.